We have a series of presentations both today and tomorrow from school districts in the state. I have worked with and staff. Sue has worked with the Oregon School Boards Association and with the school administrators to bring in a sampling of 8 districts, all with somewhat different circumstances, to give the committee an idea of what the budget issues are on sort of the micro level versus the macro level that we always seem to be focused on in the committee here. I mean, we basically get numbers that are projections for 198 school districts and 20 ESDs, and we very rarely, at least at this point, get to see what the actual impacts are on the ground in individual school districts, and that's what we're going to attempt to do here today. Here today we have the LeGrand School District, I believe we have the McMinnville School District, Rogue River, and Springfield. This is going to be a very quick process in the sense that since there are going to be 4 school districts each day, we have to go through each school district in a very sort of orderly period of time. So I'm going to give each school district 15 minutes to present their issues, and I'm going to ask the committee to hold their questions until the end of that 15 minutes, and then we're going to have about 10 minutes for questions, and then we have to go on to the next school district to be able to stay on schedule. So we're going to start this morning with the LeGrand School District.
That's my
And for the record, if both of you could introduce yourselves and start your presentation.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Jay Rowell. I'm the superintendent from LeGrand School District. And I brought with me today my board chair,
Steve Joseph from LeGrand. Each of you should have a school district profile that we prepared there very briefly, and I'd like to start out by, first of all, expressing our appreciation for being asked to come down here and give you a little local level feedback of what the education district budgeting process will have on us there in LeGrand. LeGrand has been a school district that has been suffering declining enrollment, and you can see that very readily by the first page graph, almost a 25% decline in its membership over the last 10 years. That's in and of itself creates tremendous budgetary problems, as you can well appreciate. But some of the other statistics that we're going to turn to very briefly, I think, will show you how the district has been managing to handle that quite well. Our staffing numbers, if you were to look at this pie graph on the bottom of page 1, you'll see that, well, it appears that we've cut considerably in administration and in certified. You see an increase in the classified numbers. I want to explain briefly that that's primarily due to our assumption of some special ed programs over the last couple of years, and those are not FTEs in that number count. That's a body count only. So some of the assumption of those special ed numbers is why you would see an increase there on the base numbers of the classified staffs. Turning over to demographics, it would come as no surprise that we are a predominantly white by race demographics. Our numbers of minorities and economically disadvantaged is quite high on that graph. So let's just turn real quickly to the process of the expenditures there. What I'd like to point out to you is over the last 4 years, and I say this with tongue in cheek because I am a attorney by profession who has served back in the early 90s on the local city council. I had the distinct privilege of starting to serve that time period just when Measure 5 was enacted, and we had the opportunity to go through all of the cuts that were brought about in the early 90s with Measure 5, and then happened to be convinced to go to the school board in 2002, and now I find myself in that same economic plight on another side of the calendar 10 years later with respect to the cuts that we're having to experience in the school side of things. And I'm here as a parent of districts and of children that are in the district. My son's a senior this year, our youngest child. And I'm dramatically concerned about the impact that this budget at 5.0 is going to have with respect to the continuation of services at what are now a very base level in the LeGrand district. You can see the actual expenditures from 01 through 02 and those numbers. It's been cut each year, even though we have somewhat bottomed out on our declining enrollment over the last four-year period. We've taken the cuts that we've had to take. We last year took the accrual method. We still don't know what that will do to us. And I'm going to defer to our superintendent to explain to you what the cuts have been and what we're going to do with a budget at $5 million and what we need to sustain services. He's the number cruncher. But from a policy perspective, as a parent, as a concerned citizen, I simply want to express to you that we believe that the cuts that we have undergone over the last 4 years are putting our services at a very base minimum, and the lack of adequate funding is going to be a problem that will impact our community even more dramatically. And I say that without an axe to grind in terms of kids in school, but as a concerned party. And let me just simply go ahead and turn it over to our superintendent, Jay Rowell, who will explain to you in a little more detail the essence and nature of those cuts, as well as what we need in order to have a sustained services level based upon that. It's not been a fun process serving over the years in as a public servant to cities or school boards or bodies, and I can give you my testimony that I review numbers rather thoroughly, and I know that we are as lean a machine as we can be in Eastern Oregon. So for that, I appreciate your inviting us again here, and Jay, go ahead.
If you look at the third page entitled Previous Cuts to LeGrand School District, it kind of gives you an overview of the efficiencies that we have made in just the last 4 years. As you, Steve said, we've been in a declining enrollment district for 10 years. We have lost, prior to 02, approximately 25 staff members just through attrition, in that we did not rehire those positions. They were not RIF positions, but we did lose an additional amount of staff. In the last 4 years, you can see specifically that we have closed elementary schools. We have reduced administration greatly. At this point, I'm a superintendent, but I also wear the hat of personnel curriculum director, curriculum, staff development, Title I, Title IX. There are a number of other things that I also keep control over. The real impact here, of course, was in 03-04, where we had to cut a huge amount from our district, and we have really worked hard to maintain as many programs for kids and to maintain our class sizes. And quite frankly, our class sizes are not bad. Kindergarten, we cap out at about 22. I'd like to see that at about 15. I know that's not realistic. In first grade through third grade, we cap out around 25 to 26. Fourth through sixth grade, right around 29 to 30. You're starting to get too crowded in a sixth grade classroom that was built for the maximum of 25 kids when you have 30 sixth grade bodies in there. Middle school and high school, each class section runs between 32 and 39, depending on the class, of course. We still have electives where we only have 15 or 20 kids. I don't know in a high school schedule how you avoid that. This next year, as we look at making cuts, we're going to be cutting further now into the staffing. We're going to be affecting those class sizes. We're going to be losing whole programs. To this point, the one program I can really point to that has been totally devastated by cuts is our alternative education program. We have contracted with the ESD, and that is a portion of our alternative ed program. We had our own alternative ed that was very different. It was a whole day program. It was structured so that students would be able to get the entire amount of credits that they would need to graduate, but they would do it in a format that was more applicable to them and where they were. We've had to lose that program. That program is serving 30 children. Some of those have gone to the ESD. Some of those have attempted to come back into the regular high school. It's very, very difficult for them to do that. some of the other things you see here, of course, are things that you're going to hear about from many other folks. We've lost our elementary PE instructors. That has an impact. We have seen the impact in the number of students that are willing to take after-school athletics. We've seen that it impacts from our middle school teachers' perspective, our PE teachers there. They say the kids do not have the skills that they had 3 years ago. So we're seeing immediate impact on those kinds of things. The rest, as you go through there, you'll see a number of those were efficiencies. I'll be the first to admit that we had efficiencies that we could make. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, there are no more efficiencies to be made. Everyone is working as hard as they can, running 150% in most jobs. The next page, if you turn to just the very last page here, the proposed budget cuts with a $5.0 billion state school fund. And I address the fact that, you know, if this were the first time I were asked to make this kind of a cut, it may not be quite as devastating or as difficult for me to do that at this point. After having done this for every year that I've been a superintendent of the last 3 years, we're running out of things that we can cut. And so you'll see there a very short list of proposed items that we would be able to take reductions in. Classroom teachers, 13. That's one at every grade level. That is going to increase class size, and it's going to mean that we lose programs. 10% of our classified salary and benefits, because we have part-time, full-time, 9-month, 10-month, and 12-month employees, it's difficult to say exactly how many positions that would be. It's closer to 20% of the actual staff that we have currently. 10% of administration. That's only $113,000 at this point because we've already cut administration significantly. Or we could cut our athletics and activities. Now, you'll notice that those things there add up to more than the $1.1 million that we're looking at cutting, of course. This is a list of things that we have generated that we could cut from. Doesn't mean we want to. Doesn't mean it's good for kids. But this is also all there is that's left to cut from. We don't have any other positions out there any longer. Beyond this, the only other thing that we could look at for any kind of revenue would be our contingency fund. We're right now at a 1.5% contingency of our general fund. That is low. We had a boiler scare earlier this year. If that boiler had gone out in the middle of winter when it is 20 degrees in LeGrand, the classrooms dropped to 43 degrees very quickly. I had to close school for the day until we could get that boiler repaired. If that boiler had gone out and not been able to be repaired, we would have wiped out the contingency plus another $200,000 that we don't have. So to drop our contingency any lower would be dangerous. Finally, what operating resources do we think we need? I'm going to be very honest with you here. We took, in our budgeting process this last time, we received the authority to appropriate the accrual, which means basically that we could spend the $766,000 that we appropriated from the accrual at the end of this year if our expenditures exceed our revenues. We have not taken that accrual yet. We anticipate that we're going to have to take a part of it because we're not going to be able to maintain our programs throughout the year without doing it. It's part of the budget. We're working hard to trim everything we can throughout the year so we don't have to take that full amount, but at this point in the year, I can't guarantee that we won't. We understand that we use that accrual to stem cuts that we would have had to make last year. That's not something we expect to be coming back our way very soon at any one time. The reason we took the accrual is because of the lost payment we had 2 years ago. When we lose $100,000, $900,000, it's kind of hard to recover from. So we did plan on using this accrual. We understand we're going to take those cuts. Beyond that, there are roll-up costs, as you're all aware. Our roll-up costs, salary, we're in negotiations with our two major groups right now. We anticipate a 2%. We've done the freezes. We've done the 1% or the 0.5% increases in salary. You cannot keep your staff going with those kinds of increases. They will revolt. Health insurance, as you well know, is going up dramatically. We plan anywhere from a 9 to 16% increase for next school year. PERS, we're being told somewhere around 17% expect. We still have, of course, liability insurance, utility costs, all those kinds of things that we don't have firm numbers on. We anticipate, beyond the amount that we know we have to cut of the $700,000 with the accrual, another $400,000 that we would have to cut in order to adjust for these roll-up costs. What we're asking you to look at is the fact that 5.0 takes from us that additional $400,000. In our district, we figure $75 per ADM would get us $183,000 per $100 million. So we're asking for $220 million in additional revenue to the state school fund in order for our district to receive the $400,000 we need to avoid those further devastating cuts to the classroom. At this time, that ends our presentation. We're open to taking questions.
Mr. Rowe and Mr. Joseph, I very much appreciate you coming this long distance to be here today. Just to reiterate to the committee, we will have about 10 more minutes with these presenters, and then we will go on to the next. The senators that are on the committee will be excused from the 10 o'clock session till 10:30 if they choose to be excused. If they don't choose to be excused, they can actually go to the session. So that's so are there any questions for Mr. Rowe or Mr. Joseph? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for coming over. Did you come over yesterday in the weather? Was it bad?
Actually, came over the day before.
Good. Yeah, you had your meetings.
That's right.
I had a couple of questions. Your contract with the teachers, how many school days do you have, and how is your school doing in its performance measures based upon either No Child Left Behind or the Oregon School Report Card?
We have 188 contract days, 176 student contact days in our contract. As for our measures in our state report card, all of our schools are satisfactory to strong. In AYP measure, our high school and middle school did not meet because of the one subcategory of special ed students in both areas, both math and or math in the middle school, math and reading in the high school did not meet in just in the special ed. All other areas, all other subcategories of students met the criteria for AYP, and all elementary schools did.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Thank you both for coming down. Just a couple of quick questions. Lost of students, I just did some quick calculations. Since 1993, you've lost 678 students. Part of this may be due to Major 5. Can you give us another reason, or what's going on the ground that we should know about?
Well, the timber economy, as you well know in our area, Senator Nelson, is primary culprit in that regard in terms of our declining enrollment, in terms of our natural resources base and the reductions that have been presented in that arena.
Follow up?
Yes.
That was for Senator Walker's minute. He turned me off. He was listening to this. Like I said, I don't want to have Nelson talking about this natural resource issue again, but I didn't even lead in the question either. So just let him answer. Okay. Second thing, you were talking about ESDs. I know you guys have an issue up there, but my question is there any cost efficiencies if you change your ESD program, or is there any benefits? What would you like to see done on ESD, and how is that going to help you financially?
I think our ESD serves us very, very well in the programs that they have provided for us. Right now, we have ESD services in the area of alternative ed. We have contract services for printing, and we have resolution services for some of our further special ed needs, such as speech, diagnostics, occupational and physical therapist. There are some efficiencies to be made there. If we were to lose an ESD from our area, in a large school district like the Grand, we would have no problem taking on our speech and diagnostics and possibly even saving some money, since our pay scale and benefit scale is lower than the ESDs at this time. It would be next to impossible for us to contract a full-time occupational physical therapist. We just don't have the need for that in our district. That would have to be contracted through resolution services of some sort. Alternative ed, Right now, we have one facility available that we could use for that purpose. I'm not sure that we could take the number of students that they're currently serving, and so we would have to look at restructuring part of our high school to include the numbers of students that we would have to use. Does that answer the question?
Yes. One of the plans I've heard is maybe there'd be two ESDs east of the Cascade Mountains. Is that going to provide service to the children and save you money? How's that going to all play out?
I guess I have a concern that where those ESDs would be placed and where the revenue would be streaming to. Because if our revenue for our local area is going anywhere west of the Blues, we're in trouble. Because quite often, it's as you know, it's impossible to get over that mountain. So are the services going to be based right in LeGrand? Are they going to be on, you know, the Union County area? Those are issues that we would want to discuss. If they're not, we're going to want to discuss, how can we run our own services then? Because we feel we can do that more efficiently from our side of the mountain than we can if we have to cross over to receive those.
You're talking going into Pendleton or something.
Right.
Not going into Portland over the Cascades.
No, Portland, that's an absolute no.
Okay.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rao, following up on that, I want to hit on just that one little point you talked about where you said there are efficiencies to be made there with the ESDs because our pay and benefit scale is lower than the ESDs.
Yes.
Can you expand on that a little bit and tell me how different your pay and benefit scale is?
When I can give you an example. This is one of probably the best ways I can do that. And when a contract was pulled from Union Baker ESD for the Long-Term Care and Treatment Center, also known as Grand Ron Child Center, there was one certified instructor there. That instructor was under the contract for UBESD. When she came under our contract, her salary was reduced by $8,000 per year. Benefits, we pay a cap of $690. The cap at the UBESD is, I believe, over $900. I don't know exactly what theirs is at this time. That's where the savings are that I'm talking about.
And, Mr. Rao, that's the savings I'm talking about, too.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Senator Nelson.
Just another follow-up question on the ESDs. You know, there's been some issues going on. We got things going on in this building. One of the things that I've heard is the fact that there is a lack of communication between the ESDs and the basic superintendents of schools, that the boards of the ESDs are not really directly connected to the school districts, and that there would be some benefit in having superintendents actually serving on the boards of ESD. Do you have any comment on that?
I would think that'd be very beneficial. That's been one of our major issues, I believe, on our side, is the communication, knowing, we know our districts, we know how our budgets run, being able to get that same kind of insight into the ESD revenue and expenditures would be beneficial, and also having a say in what direction they're heading with what programs.
Thank you. Yes.
There's no other questions I had, Mr. Chairman. Could you please tell me what other grants, the $14 million, there's more money the school has than that $14 million. What's your total budget? And how many bonds do you have for construction?
Right now, the only bond we have outstanding is the technology bond that we passed about 8 years ago, is my belief. And other monies, of course, include, you know, federal grants and IDEA and Title I. We also have state grants for CSR, continuous school improvement for one of our elementary schools. About it right now.
What's the total?
I think it's 18.
18
to 19 is total.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any additional questions? Mr. Rowe and Mr. Joseph, what's the your enrollment, as you clearly pointed out, has been dropping. And in fact, it's actually, although it looks like the rate of decline has slowed, it's still dropping. Do you have any long-term prognosis for how much it may drop in the next couple of years? And also, since we no longer have stop loss, and you are in the sort of, we take either this year or the last year in terms of your enrollment, what sort of challenges does that make for your district?
We've done a study where we've looked at birth rates, and also we have what we call Heidi Ho, which is a preschool kindergarten program. Taking those two things into consideration, we actually intend or expect to see a rise in kindergarten ADM for next year. What we're dealing with in the continuing decline that you see, because we our kindergartens have actually been higher the last 2 to 3 years. That's what's helped us even out our enrollment. Our upper classes, junior, senior classes, have been also fairly large, so we've not seen a real difference there. After 2 more years, we still anticipate that our kindergarten enrollment is going to remain at about 200 per class level. Our current freshmen and sophomore are only around 150 to 160. As those classes get through and the larger classes come in, we'll start seeing an increase, is our anticipation. That's anybody's guess as to whether or not that will hold. But for the last 5 years that we've been tracking it, it's been a very good indicator of looking at birth rate and actual number of students coming in.
Yes.
Yes, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I look at the economy of the LeGrand area, it strikes me that you have basically two kind of major segments in addition to perhaps some cattle ranching, and one of those that you've already mentioned is the wood products industry, and the other one is perhaps the public sector, especially the public sector as it relates to the university there in LeGrand. The question is, how stable has that public sector been? Has it grown in LeGrand? I'm trying to get some assessment of how important the Boise Cascade or whoever it happens to be is to the economy, whether something else has stepped up to take its place. What would have been the consequence if you hadn't had, and I'm assuming some stability at Eastern Oregon University, if you hadn't had this stability?
Well, Eastern has grown, and we appreciate the legislative support that it receives down here as well. Again, because of the education component, we're not here to try and ask that you rob higher ed necessarily for K-12. But the educational component of what Eastern is doing has been a very marginal growth rate. It certainly hasn't come anywhere close to offsetting the amount of natural resource base we lost in the early 90s due to our timber declines. We have a fairly stable ag economy in the county, and the farming practices and farming and ranching there, those numbers haven't changed. We're not seeing the level of growth in the public sector employment of any significant nature. So we're hoping that we're at the bottom of any decline trends, looking for all ways of economic development that any small community can in terms of increasing its employable base, but no real big sugar daddies on the horizon.
I think you've had some, if I may. You've had some economic development there. I think you've got a call center for one of the health insurance companies. Which is, a pretty natural and a nice, but it's a little piece. welcome, but still a relatively little piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take an awful lot of that kind of industry to make up for the wood products industry that has really been in the tank in your community as well as elsewhere. And I have the sense or feeling that this would really have been a terribly devastating thing to the city of LeGrand had it not been for the being shored up a little bit by the public sector, especially Eastern Oregon University at this time.
Wood products, of course, Boise Cascade is still our largest employer, followed by railroad and the public sector.
Right? Yeah.
Definitely the top three.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're now at the point where we actually need to move on. I very much thank you for both for coming.
We thank you.
And,
thank you.
Please stay in contact. The next school district is the McMinnville School District.
Well, good morning, Chairman Devlin, and good morning to members of the subcommittee. Thank you for having us here today.
Could you introduce yourself, and could the other gentleman introduce himself also?
Yes, I'm Mary Alice Russell, and I'm the superintendent at McMinnville School District. To my right is Board Chairman Jay Lilly, and also joining us today, but in the audience, I'd like to introduce another board member, Francis Charbonnier, who is our vice chair of the McMinnville School Board. Today, what we hope to accomplish as the district prior to us is to give you a brief snapshot of McMinnville School District, to provide you some comparisons between school years 01-02 and this current year, and to share with you some of our interest in the revenue impact on both our district and presently in the past and in the upcoming school year. So Jay is first going to share with you a little bit about McMinnville Schools.
Welcome. Thanks for having us here this morning. Welcome to us, I guess. But thanks for having us here this morning. Just a little bit about McMinnville School District. We are a school district that encompasses both McMinnville and Yamhill, serving a population of about 35,000 people. Certainly we have small business, agriculture, we have steel industry, and now tourism certainly is starting to make its way into our area. The community surrounding McMinnville and Lafayette is experiencing growth. That's been on a continual basis. We anticipate an additional 400 students between now and 2008. So we are projecting growth in our community and our schools. Right now, our elementary schools are full, and to the point where we're putting in modulars and everything else to keep up with that growth in the elementary. Our middle schools seem to be capacity-wise okay, and our high school will reach capacity plus in about 4 years. So we're dealing with some issues with our facilities and how we're going to expand to meet the students as they continue to come to our district. We currently have a long-range planning task force that's looking at those issues of how we're going to deal with that, and it's been a good process within the community with a lot of community involvement. Certainly that will look at additional bonding and construction of new schools at the elementary and high school levels. So that's kind of what we're looking at in the future. We have 9 schools, 6 elementary, 2 middle, and 1 high school. And our growth since 2002 budget has been 337 students. We're anticipating 229 additional students next year. So you see that we are growing, and we're going to need to anticipate that and meet that in our budget necessities over the next few years. So
I think the first page of your handout illustrates that for you. Mr. Lilly did refer to our growth, and you can see by the pink bar graph that, in fact, student enrollment in McMinnville continues to be on the rise. You will also note in the box below where we have a comparison of our students who are weighted relative to the rest of our student population. You'll see that the blue line on the graph indicates that our student population who are weighted students, those who receive extra weighting for special education, ELL, poverty, et cetera, are going at a rate faster than our mainstream population. If we could ask you to take a look at the next page where we can get into the demographics just a little bit more, you'll see two pie charts. So the first on top is 2001-2002, and the pie chart on the bottom is, of course, this current year. And if you look at the area shaded in yellow, you'll see that our largest minority population happens to be Hispanic in terms of our total student ethnic makeup, and that population as well is growing. In 2001-2002, for example, 19% of our students were Hispanic, and that has grown to represent 24% of our student body overall. Likewise, our Caucasian students are decreasing in total number. In 2001-2002, we were at 76% of our population, and presently that number is 71%. If you would turn to the next page, continuing to focus on our demographic populations, we have three sets of bars on the top graph, one representing ELL students, the other special education, and the third our poverty population. And if I can focus you on the one entitled ELL first, I think you'll see that the light blue or the smaller bar indicates what percent, for example, of our students have a second language challenge as well when they enter the school doors. So in addition to learning the content required of all students, they'll need to bridge the gap by learning English as well. So in 2001-2002, you'll see that 13.4% of our population were requiring assistance in language development, and that number has grown to 17.9%, or an increase of 4.5% for the district over the last few years. We're projecting continued growth in that area in the upcoming school year, which is the bar in red, although we've made a conservative projection relative to that number for budgeting purposes. We see a similar trend, but not as rapid, for our special ed population. You'll note that between 2001-2002 and 2004-2005, that percentage of students requiring special services has increased by 2.3%. And in the area of poverty, again, a slower rate at 1%. At the same time, if I could draw your attention to the graph at the bottom half of that page, you will see a number of bars indicating of our elementary, middle, and high school students what percentage of those populations qualify for free and reduced lunch. So, for example, if you look at the light blue bar under above the 2001-2002 year, you will see that 41.8% of all McMinnville students qualify for free or reduced meals. If you move to the right and above 2004-2005, that light blue bar compares, and you'll note that that population has grown to 47.9%. But I think the best illustration, although these pie charts are very tiny at the bottom of the page, I think the best illustration demonstrates the ratio of our population who does not qualify for free and reduced to our population who do in both of the given years. And you'll see that that blue piece of the pie continues to grow in the McMinnville school community. Jay, did you want to touch on our next page, which would include the staffing graphs?
Yes. The staffing graphs, as you see on the next page, are just identify how McMinnville School District has met the challenge of increasing populations of students, certainly in 2001-2002. You'll see what those percentages were. The only one that has grown in that percentage is the licensed staff, and that's been our attempt to maintain contact time with students with licensed teachers, and as we meet with the challenges of funding. You can see on the bottom graph that we've increased that by a little bit on the classified and licensed staff. We've raised the ratio with administration and confidential as our student population has grown.
So it's kind of a different way of looking at it. For example, for every confidential employee which we have in the district, and our confidential employee might be those employees assigned to the district office who might assist with bargaining or might assist in the personnel office, that population, we have one employee for every 542 students that make up the district. In comparison, if you move to the far left, We have presently one licensed employee, meaning a teacher or a counselor, someone who's working directly in the schools, a 19.5 ratio. And so the good news we feel in McMinnville is we've been able to maintain our priority at the classroom level. However, in terms of efficiencies, the number of students that our administrative and class confidential staff become responsible for is greater and growing over time. We can turn your attention to the next page. This will give you an idea of what the total operating budget is for McMinnville School District. You'll see that in 01-02, we ran a budget of approximately $53 million. For 04-05, we are at $60 million. And you'll see that we have the percent of those budgetary increases in the right-hand column. I think down at the bottom, if I could draw your attention to the supplies category and the capital category, one of the things that is going up for us and will continue in the near future is a need to address increasing our supplies budgets and our capital budgets, because over the past we've cut them back so far in order to pay for staffing that we're to the point that we need to begin building back programs either in terms of capital repairs, capital replacements, and or additional supplies and materials for our staff. So one of the questions I think this committee may be interested in is, of course, what's different about McMinnville schools today than may have been the case in 01-02 or prior to the 01-02 school year. What I'd like you to see that in this sheet on the left-hand side are programs that were in place in our school district 01-02, and on the right-hand side, what is left of those programs in 04-05. And I'll just highlight a couple of those for you. We recently completed an architect review of our facilities, both because of capacity increases, as was indicated to you earlier, but in addition because we have felt that we are in need of repair and have put off many of those essential items for a large amount of time. In a facilities review that was completed this past spring, architects have determined that approximately 6.3 in deferred maintenance is necessary to be addressed in the near future, and of course is something that our long-range facility task force is reviewing at this time. If you go a few items down on the left-hand side, you'll see a number of 49. That in 01-02, we had 49 maintenance grounds or custodians, individuals who assisted in keeping our grounds up or our buildings clean. And you'll note to the right that we are down to 37 of those individuals for a district of 6,000 students. If I could draw your attention down a little bit further in terms of programs more directly impacting students, you'll see that we no longer provide our counselors extended day to prepare for students or to assist in exiting students either at the front end or the back end of the school year. We at one time offered Japanese as a second language in our secondary schools. We no longer offer that program in McMinnville schools. We once had a new teacher mentoring program where we were able to provide staff development and classroom management and instruction to our first year and second year teachers. We no longer offer that program. We did offer choir to our elementary students, and that has been eliminated. We did provide PE to kindergarten students, and that program is no longer provided to kindergarten. We did offer kindergarten music by a professional twice a week, and that's been reduced to once a week. Going down the list a little further, you'll note we offered a Kinder Plus program that we staffed out of general fund at the time. Kinder Plus for us is an extended day kindergarten program, so students would go half a day, and then based on students with highest needs, those having the greatest difficulty reading, for example, they'd be given extended time. That program was totally eliminated in 02-03, and then in 03-04, we were able to provide that program for one-third of the school year, the third trimester, and now this year, we have reinstated the program, only we're only paying 1.2% out of the general fund and have to redirect grant funds in order to pick up the other 1.8 FTE. The district in 01-02 had full-time media specialists at the elementary level. We are now only providing half-time media specialists and or librarians. They function both to assist in media, which is broader than books, but also run the library. We had two full-time curriculum specialists. They were staff members, licensed staff members, assigned to our largest elementary schools to assist with instruction and training of staff, and we've eliminated those positions. We did provide a $63,618 after-school program that we funded out of the general fund. We no longer provide that amount and only contribute $10,000 to the program. At the same time, we're very pleased to share with you that we've been able to provide a strong after-school program for our elementary students, mostly through partnership with our community, and we have a strong commitment from the city of McMinnville to fund KOB, Kids on the Block. They do an annual fundraiser each year that helps to support that program. We once funded our middle school athletics at $172,000, and you can see that we are feeding that only by $74,000 and offsetting the additional cost through grant dollars, a grant that we will discontinue at the end of this year. And, of course, you'll see that we've held the costs on our athletic programs since 2001-2002 when we were spending $377,000 and now only $342,000. In terms of class size, we've listed for you our class sizes at the bottom. You'll note that elementary is 1 to 25, middle 1 to 27, and our high school 1 to 28. And I'd like you to be aware that while those are class sizes, they represent averages, and that at our high school today when I go back, I'll be dealing with one class that's of 37 students. So we don't have as much wiggle room to offset when we get loads at a particular grade level or at a, in a particular section. The next page sort of shares with you some of the volatility we've experienced in the district over these last couple of years. You'll note in the box on the left-hand column, so the box entitled July 2002, September 2002, those represent $1.8 million in reductions that were made at the district. So the first page I just reviewed sort of says what was then and what is now. And then this page lists the specific items, in very specific as to what was cut and how much dollar value or worth that item had to the district. So by the end of September 30th, 2002, we had cut the $1.8 million that you see all totaling on the left-hand side. Now, to the right-hand side, this is where it gets rather confusing, because if you go to the bottom of the page, you'll see a number of $2.9 million. $2.9 million in programs and or staff was reduced at the end of July 2003. And if you recall, there was not yet a final budget to schools, so we built our budget on a 4.8 appropriation. And that 4.8 appropriation was part of the reason that we made those $2.9 million in cuts at that time. Later, in the summer months, we received that $5.2 billion appropriation, which upped the pool for us. We decided we would spend some of that difference between what we built the budget on, 4.8, and the 5.2, to add back some program. So that in the gray was restored. And then that in the white below, where it says reductions not restored 2003, which totals about $700,000, remained absent from our program. So if you take the 1.8 and the $700,000, you'll see that we've made about $2.5 million in cuts over the last several years. To the next page. The colored bars above recommend a demonstrate a comparison of revenue to expenditures. And the two sets on the left, the first is state school fund, and then the total revenue for general fund combined. So state school fund, local taxes, common school, etc. So the blue bar, or purplish kind of bar, is the actual revenue that we received in 01-02. The green represents the revenue that we received in 04-05, and of course the yellow is what we estimate to receive based on the $5.0 billion appropriation. And if you look at the total revenue comparison, you would see an increase over the last 2 years with the $5.0 billion appropriation. And if you want to attach numbers to that, certainly you can look at the column below, which would list what the total revenue, 01-02, $34 million, 04-05, $35 million, and projected for 05-06, $38 million. If you move to the columns to the right, however, you will note that other expenditures from the blue, green to yellow, and total expenditures from the blue, green to yellow, will exceed the revenue that we received in these years. And I think probably the most important thing we want to bring your attention to are the little bars to the far right of the graph. And you'll note that in 01-02, we were actually able to have an ending fund balance from the revenue that we received relative to the expenditures that we had. This current year, we will be exceeding the revenue that we're bringing in, and we project to exceed in expenditures again the revenue that the $5.0 billion appropriation will provide for that. So another way of looking at it would be, again, if you go to the columns just underneath that, in 01-02, we were able to have a fund balance of $2,000,004. Our budget design this year for 04-05 is to exceed the new revenue by $1,000,009, and we project that our expenditures for 05-06 will exceed the revenue by $1,000,001. The reason that we are able to operate in a deficit mode is because we were able to establish in fund balance through a combination of not spending all the money, that was the difference between the 4.8 and the 5.2, through cuts totaling $2.5 million over time and not having recurring costs, and through savings that we attempted to achieve by, even though we allocated, say, $100 per kid to a school, asking administrators not to really expend that on supplies. So combination savings and planning for the future. You'll see that in the section below that, in terms of personnel costs, in 01-02, insurance costs, medical, dental, disability, life, for the district were $2,000,009. Those costs have grown over time by 61% to $4,007,000 for the district in 04-05. In terms of PERS, we paid $2,003,000 in 01-02 at an 18.73%, and we're pleased to say that we have captured a savings of 4.2%, in other words, lesser expense at the 11.11 rate for 04-05. In terms of our salary increases or contract commitments, you'll note that in 01-02, our employees received increases in 3% above or better. You'll note that in this current year, increases are at 1%, and in the footnotes below, you'll note that administrators and confidential employees were frozen in terms of any kind of salary increases in the past. Our calculations the calculation that would best serve McMinnville School District into the future would be a minimum appropriation of $5.2 billion, because with that minimum appropriation spending, we feel that we could offset our proposed or our anticipated deficit for current program, and we could add back some of the programs that were lost and illustrated on the previous two pages. We would not be able to grow our program anywhere near to the quality ed model. However, we would like to see a restoration of some programs lost, plus to be able to continue our programs forward. So that's kind of a snapshot overview of the district and some of our financial issues, and we'd be happy to address any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Russell, I'm a little confused about the confidential employee. Could you explain that a little bit better? I've not seen that description before.
Yes, we have classified employees, which are often thought of as people who are school cafeteria workers, students who are educational assistants in the classroom, students who might provide playground support to the schools, and then there's a classification of confidential employees, which are part of most districts, and they have responsibility to deal with information of a confidential nature, primarily as related to bargaining.
Well, it seems like you have a high percentage of those.
We actually do in McMinnville. In fact, there are, I think, 11 employees currently, and they are grandfathered into that confidential status, and some of them, by statute, would not actually fit the confidential employee definition. We have an agreement with our association that as those employees vacate the position, they would become part of the new hires would become part of the classified agreement. So we see that number decreasing over time relative to the category, but the job functions would remain the same. So in other words, we would still need an employee in that position. So for example, one of the confidential employees we have is a payroll clerk. A payroll clerk typically would be in the classified group. They were miscategorized in our district probably 10 or 15 years ago, and the unions have agreed to allow that individual stay in the position upon their retirement. We still need the payroll clerk, but the position would turn into a classified position.
Mr. Chair, yes. Thank you. Well, that's helpful to understand. Is there a different pay scale for a confidential employee? Is it higher than...
Yes, we have four contracts that we manage in the district, one for license, one for classified, one for confidential, and one for administrators. And our confidential scale is currently higher than our classified scale.
Okay, so you'll see those costs go down as
we will. In fact, this past year, one of those positions did change. We had an employee leave the district. That happened to be a receptionist position, which should not be categorized as confidential. It happened to have been historically done so that way in our district. We reposted the position, rehired, that is now a classified job.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Russell. That helps me understand how that happened, and somewhere along the line they got misclassified,
right,
and you dealt with it appropriately. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excellent presentation of the information. Your forms and your data is really easy to go through, and I appreciate the time and effort and the professionalism you put forth. Could you please tell us what your contingency fund is and how many school days you contract with your teachers for?
We contract for 190 days with our teachers. 174 of those days are student contact days or instructional days, and the other the difference between the two are either in-service days or grading days or combination of grading and training days for teachers. If you'll note, I think it's the fourth or fifth page in where it gives the overall budget with the $60 million on top, amount on top. If you'll go to the bottom half of that page, budget 0405, you'll note that we indicated under transfers $4,500,000. That's money that we put as a line item in our budget to carry forward into the upcoming year in anticipation of revenue shortfalls for this biennium.
Thank you.
Yes. Senator Nelson, then Senator Whitsitt.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking, I mean, your enrollment increase since 1991 has been about 1,391 students. The grant has been a loss of 678 students. I was noticing on your second page here that basically your increase in students seems to become mostly from minority students, Hispanic.
Yes, it does.
One of the issues I think we have in my district, particularly in the Hermiston area, is that since it's a migrant population, that a lot of times their enrollment will fluctuate as much as 20% to 25%. Do you have that same problem with your...
We do have a lot of fluctuation in terms of our students, and a number of students who say will leave during the holidays and come back at different periods of mid-January, sometimes beginning of January, sometimes not till the end of January. However, our population continues to grow in both migrant and ELL.
Yes.
Consistent growth there. In fact, the last couple of years, any growth that has come to the district, we've attributed to those populations. And unlike LeGrand, we do have the opportunity of being a growing district, which puts us in a different light than some of our districts around us, who you'll hear from today, who are declining in student enrollment.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, yes. That indicates the difficulty that we have, too, is because there's so many different school districts and so many different circumstances.
Sure.
How do you address those things at a statewide level? My sense is we need to put more trust back in the community level, give your folks some more flexibility.
We would appreciate that.
Senator Whitson.
Chair Devlin, Ms. Russell. On this graph here, we have a student-to-staff ratio on licensed employees of 19.5, which is just a little less than the state average of 19.8, as I figured. And then two pages later, we have the teacher-student ratio, which range from 1 to 25 to 1 to 28. Could you explain that discrepancy?
Yes. On the first graph, where we have licensed, that would include both classroom licensed employees and non-classroom licensed employees. So, for example, a counselor who is a licensed employee is not a classroom teacher. So the counselor is not part of the count of the ratio for class size, but the counselor is part of the count for total licensed population to total student population. That makes sense?
Follow up, please.
Yes.
And when we're studying the number of, the number of teachers, that actually would include the number of counselors, so that the number of teachers is overstated. Is that correct?
Are you referring to the bar graph?
I'm not talking about this. I'm talking in general within the Department of Education.
Would you mind restating that question? I think I'm following you, but I'm not sure that I am. Would you ask that one more time?
We have a table someplace in the morass of paper on my desk that says that a certain percentage of the employees are teachers. does that include counselors, or does that just include classroom teachers?
You know, without looking at the document you're referring to, I couldn't be specific, but here's what I would suggest, that make sure that it does say teacher-to-student ratio versus licensed-to-student ratio, because licensed is the broader category that would have, for example, a PE teacher, a music teacher, a librarian, a counselor. Those are all part of that licensed-to-student ratio. But they're not reducing class size as classroom teachers at the elementary level. At elementary level, a classroom teacher for the 1 to 24 ratio or the 1 to 25 ratio is the first grade teacher, the second grade teacher, the third grade teacher. So you really need to look at which document you're being presented. And so for us, it's very two different pieces of information. I'll give you a different ratio for licensed employees to students than I will for classroom teachers to students.
Thank you.
Representative March, and then we will have to move on to our next panel.
Just briefly, so we have the same answers from everybody, how is your school doing on No Child Left Behind and the state report cards?
In terms of the state report card, our 6 elementary schools, 4 were rated strong this year, and 2 is exceptional. Our middle school, 2 middle schools and high school were rated as satisfactory. In terms of our AYP, we have 1 middle school who did not make AYP for the subpopulation of special ed, and our high school did not make AYP for the subpopulation populations of special ed and ELL.
Thank you.
Can I just say,
yes.
Should those programs be coordinated with the state report card?
I know that there is work to do so, and I think I would probably give you a little bit of a yes and a no. Yes, I think we need to coordinate the report, and the reason I think we need to coordinate report is timing is everything, and parents, I think, are becoming confused. We send them one set of information in the fall, another set of information in January, and I think in many ways they don't know what to believe or what is true. On the other hand, we think the Oregon report card, as it currently is designed, has represented schools in a more appropriate manner than AYP does of and by itself. For example, it's difficult for me as a superintendent to accept that a school is not meeting AYP because one subpopulation fails to meet AYP. We had last year one of our elementary schools who did meet AYP this year, but last year was not meeting AYP, yet was rated on the report card as strong for all the other factors that were included in the report card. So if and when the merging does occur, I think it's essential that in Oregon we try to represent our schools as what they really are. And AYP for a subgroup is one small measure of all the many good things that schools are accomplishing. And I think we do owe it to our public from two perspectives to let them know that they have quality schools in Oregon. One is so that they can continue to support public schools and the programs that we offer to children, and that they're not fed the negative banter relative to what comes from one subgroup or not meeting AYP. And at the same time, parents in the community need to hold us accountable to make sure that every student is learning and progressing at the same rate as every other student. So it's a twofold issue for me.
Thank you, Ms. Russell.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. The next school district to present is Rogue River. I think a number of people have commented. The School Boards Association and COSA actually tried to give us a broad range of school districts, but we're going to hear from 4 today and 4 tomorrow, and obviously that's only 8 out of 198. So I think everyone has a slightly different story. We're just trying to give you a flavor of those slightly different stories, not an exact view of what is happening in every school district. If you could give your names for the record, and then we will proceed.
I'm Charles Hellman, Superintendent.
I'm Tracy Geddes. I'm the Vice Chair of the Rogue River School Board. I'd like to start this morning. I would like to say thank you for hearing us. And I'd like to give you a little background as to how I came to sit before you this morning while you're getting handed the packet of information. I moved to Rogue River 11 years ago when my son was 4 years old. At age 5, he was diagnosed as autistic. And at age 6, he began his education at Evans Valley Elementary School in Weimar. Because of the tremendous dedication and love and support of all the staff and people at Evans Valley Elementary, the support from our Southern Oregon ESD and Rogue River Middle School, my son is now He's a freshman in high school, and he is confident, he is fully integrated, and he's extremely involved. He's in drama. He loves to act. And I think this is a testament to all that is right in public education. And that experience led me to want to get back to the Rogue River School District. And I was I still am an active volunteer, and for the past 4 years have served on the school board. And that's how I came to be from or to be in front of you this morning. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. I do want to give you a brief overview, quick snapshot of Rogue River. We are a little town, small town. We are just 8 miles south of Grants Pass, a little bit north of Medford. We serve about 1,136 students is our population. We have 4 schools, 2 elementaries, Evans Valley in Weimar, like I said, Rogue River Elementary, and Rogue River Middle School. The high school is also just outside of city limits. The enrollment you can see on the pages in front of you. We have the 17 ELL students, 143 special education students, of which I have 2 are my own. I do have a daughter in first grade as well. And we have 263.4 identified students in poverty. On the bottom of the page, you can see the staff profile, where we were in 01-02. 67 staff members. We've gone down to 61. That's a loss of 9%. We have been in declining enrollment for 7 of the last 8 years. This year we were fairly steady. So we have been cutting. It's been a trend for us for 7 or 8 years, and it's just the norm for us now. Also, you can see the classified numbers. The number of administration has not changed. I will tell you that we are very efficient. My superintendent sitting beside me wears about 4 different hats. He is also curriculum director, technology director, personnel director. So I think we're very efficient in what we're doing. And at the bottom, our general fund, for 04-05, $8.6 million, and all funds budget, that would include the Title I and grant money. Our all funds budget is $10.8 million. If you want to turn the page, we have the comparison and changes in our class sizes, programs, and services. In 01-02, we had an average 20 to 22 students in kindergarten and first grade classes. That averages up to 26 and a half students now. And you can see down the list. I don't want to read you this whole report. You can read it later. At one elementary school, we do have class sizes of 36 and 37, the rural school out in Weimar. Our middle school averages from 25 in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade in 01-02 up to a high of 32.6 in 8th grade. High school also, we have examples of increased class sizes with our highest class in U.S. history being 37 students. We have classes that have that are limited simply because we can't fit any more desks in the room. And at the bottom, there are 2 examples of what our high school teachers are doing to serve the needs of our kids. The first example is one teacher, Mr. Sampson. And you can see in his first period, he teaches 3 different classes, the integrated math, basic math, and algebra. And you can see throughout the list, throughout his day, that is what he does during the day. And also our industrial arts teacher teaches different classes within the same period. We use this efficiency to try and get our kids the best education, give them the best education we can. Because of the governor's proposed 5.0 budget, we have been so efficient that we have no more room left to cut. We literally cannot reduce teaching staff without seriously tearing into the fabric of the education of our students. Charles, did you want to finish?
Well, just before I go on to the 3 examples, I want to backtrack and talk about declining enrollment, because that's a major factor in many school districts. And in fact, we know 2/3 across the state are declining enrollment. And when that happens, your revenue is in jeopardy. To backtrack, in 2001-02 school year, from the current school year, we declined about 97 students. But if you go further back to 96 and 97, we declined about 173 students. These are major numbers for us and caused many of the funding problems that we're experiencing over a number of years, 8 years in particular. And if you go back to 96, 97, a year you didn't ask for information about, we have reduced our staff by 22%. So 9% from 01-02 to current, to the current year, but 22% going back to 96, 97. So where does that leave us on the third page? In terms of ability to reduce programs any further, we don't have that ability any longer. If we did reduce staff at the elementary and middle school and accepted the idea that class sizes would go up, that would mean they would go up to about 40 to 45 students by continuing to reduce staff. We could not reduce staff at the high school level either. To do so would undermine the viability of that program. For example, if we cut a science teacher, a credit retrieval, part-time credit retrieval program that now has an enrollment of 75 students, or a complete elective program, we would increase the science class to 40 to 45 students. The potential for the dropout rate would go up from its low level now of about 2.7 to, I would predict, over 10%. And eliminating a desired program would also increase class sizes in electives to 40 to 45 students. In 2002 and 2003, we cut 10 days from the instructional program. All extra duty coaching stipends were eliminated. Coaching was done on a volunteer basis by the gracious efforts of the community. So we've gone through the instructional day cuts. The next page is a chart. You're probably familiar with it. I will not go over it, but it certainly shows the impact of funding and our ability to keep up with inflationary costs. It shows from 1990 to 91 as a base year, for example, that over all of the years since that year, school funding has not kept pace with inflation. And in fact, the governor's budget would continue that trend. So we're looking at 14 years of inflationary spending that doesn't keep up, or spending that doesn't keep up with inflation, and two more proposed years at that level. Rogue River's problem on the next page is the projected ending fund balances. For the 05-06 year, first year of the new biennium, we would be in a deficit if we maintain all programs at the current level. And we're close to about a $200,000 deficit. But you can see how that would compound if we continue that program with the assumptions listed below the chart to about a $1.6 million deficit. So this is a huge hurdle to jump over in terms of how to balance a budget with these types of deficits. The assumptions are based on some modest increases, also reflect the PERS increase of 6% for the next biennium, the governor's proposed amount, and a modest 3% increase on compensation areas. So how would we accomplish a $1.6 million problem over a two-year period? The next page shows you some of the choices, bad choices that we would have available to us. I would eliminate from that list the cuts to the current school year because the board is not considering those. Those were proposed and discarded. However, looking at the 05-06 year, I've listed the major categories that we would need to reduce as an example. Eliminating 2 staff and service days and 8 instructional days. Status quo salary levels. meaning freezes, and eliminating 3.8 licensed staff, 3.2 classified / confidential staff, eliminating the stipends to coaches, and also eliminating any support funds for the athletic program, and a minor reduction of the grounds contract.
I'd like to add in a little of the impact of what those cuts would mean. The 0.5 middle school dean would eliminate the position, as I understand it, and he would be teaching. The media specialist is our only district media specialist. And also increased class sizes. The elimination of our athletic support funds, students who are participating in sports, who are in school, that keeps them in school, I'm sure we would lose many. That would also that would influence our dropout rate and would also cause some families to want to move away, and we would compound the declining enrollment problem. So although we save money on paper, it would cost us much more, I believe, to make these cuts.
So in 06-07, we would also eliminate the same number of instructional days and also try to bargain a freeze at the table. So on the next page, one alternative to these type of cuts, in other words, not jeopardizing the instructional days to students, but leaving the other staff cuts in place, we could cut further staff. Of course, that would have a great impact to the program. If we cut one teacher from each elementary school, for instance, four of our 15 elementary school classes would have enrollments of 40 to 45 students. Cutting two middle school teachers would also increase those class sizes and eliminate all electives. Cutting two high school teachers would have the same effect, 40 to 45 students in those elective classes. That would also cause an additional cut in 06-07.
At our last board meeting, there were two students who spoke against cutting instructional days. They were quite concerned as seniors, or they were juniors, for next year. They were quite concerned of the loss of instructional time, the impact it would have on their ability to do well on college placement exams. And we want to produce students that are ready to go on to college if they want to. And they were very saddened by the loss of days in any year.
So the district would need approximately $1.5 million in extra resources to offset these cuts. That is, to run a complete school year, provide a modest increase to employees, meet the PERS requirement, maintain current staff and current programs. This would require a state school support fund of about $5.8 billion. If we considered that freezes would go into effect, we would be talking about a $5.5 billion state school support fund. I've listed 5.5 positions below that that we would like to add to bring us closer to the quality education model, which I think is an important consideration. The model is an important consideration in our target of goals. In order to add those five positions, we would be looking at something like a $6 billion state school support fund, which is about halfway to the quality ed model. I'd just like to make a few concluding points here, and it reflects the impact of a set of circumstances that we feel face many districts, and in particular Rogue River School District. Of course, I've talked about inflation and its effect on school funding. In the last 3 years, due to the economic recession and five special sessions, Rogue River School District has lost about $1 million in anticipated appropriations. The $5 billion allocation, as the governor has cited, is inadequate. We feel that that is the case. And it is only 70%, the allocation is only 70% of the quality ed model, and that's significant. A significant shortcoming.
There is another point to be made there as well in the governor's proposed budget, that in proposing how education would balance and live within those means, he recommends cutting many more positions, which I find to be inconsistent with his State of the State address, where he would rather have more people having family wage jobs. If we cut our teachers, we are cutting family wage jobs, and they will be forced to go find minimum wage jobs. That will, of course, they will lose their health coverages. They will also be contributing less to our economy. And I find that this inconsistency will only dig a bigger hole for us in the coming years.
So the cumulative effect, and I'll take one more minute, is that over a four-year period that a high school senior in Rogue River School District with these cuts will have lost 26 instructional days, and employees will have lost 30 days of salary. I want to focus also on the impact of declining enrollment. The impact to us by that degree of difficulty is enormous. We are in a hold harmless but a trend of declining enrollment over the years. We know that when you decline in enrollment, you cannot make the type of cuts to make up that resource. Having 100 students leave in our community and cutting those programs is a devastating factor for all of our parents, students, and staff. I would hope this committee would consider a higher allocation of 5.0, of course, and also consider long-term solutions, because I believe as we look down towards future bienniums, we're going to be facing these same difficult types of hearings. So I appreciate that you've heard from us this morning.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Geddes and Mr. Hillman, I appreciate your testimony this morning, and your district has done admirably well under the circumstances. And my question, and I don't want you to get alarmed by it, I just need to ask it, is, as you've indicated, you've had significant declining enrollment over the last eight-year period. In one year, you lost 173 students. That might be because of the economy. It might be because of our natural resource economy base. But nonetheless, you've lost a significant number of students. It appears that it becomes more expensive then to fulfill your obligation to the remaining students. So my question is, and this is going to get you going and get you excited, but what about merging with other districts to increase your economies of scale? And I know that gets you excited because you're a rural community and you love your schools and it becomes a real issue, but we need to ask that question. And so I'm putting it to you, and why don't you tell me what you think about that?
Well, I'd like to go first. Sorry, Charles. And say that we have actually explored that very option.
Okay.
And as we looked at it and as we looked at the cost savings, not only do you come in, you have problems with a neighboring district being in a different contract cycle with their employees, you would also have employees doing the same job in districts on different pay scales. Rogue River has a lower pay scale, unfortunately, than our bigger districts or our sister districts around us. And the transition period would be very difficult, but that wouldn't be the only reason not to do it. As we look at the positions that we could actually save, we would still need perhaps a deputy superintendent for the Rogue River area. That would be Mr. Hellman. We do not have any additional staff. Our district office, we are proposing to eliminate one person next year. We have a board secretary. We have a personnel secretary. And then we have, in our accounts payable office, the business manager. And we have two assistants for her as well. Maybe we can combine We will need that business manager and those people for the transition period at least, so there are no immediate cost savings. And we did explore this very issue for the reasons that you're saying that we should, the economy of scale. And I would like to actually clarify one point. The 175 students is the total drop from the 95-97 school year to the current school year.
Okay.
So over the last, in this time period, the total drop is 175 students.
I would answer the question this way, that I would hope the committee considers maintaining small rural school districts because they're very strong. We have a quality program. Despite the challenges that we have been faced, that we faced over the years, the Northwest Accreditation Committee just came in and reviewed our high school and said that if Bill and Melinda Gates are spending millions of dollars to create small high schools with good environments, they ought to just come to Roger School District and look at our high school. And the reason that it is a quality school is because of the dedication and commitment of our staff who are spending 12, 14 hours a day. So let's keep the viability of these small rural school districts and fund them so that they can survive and thrive.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Hellman. I appreciate that. We had a hearing on education service districts in Douglas County on Friday, and the superintendent of Power School District testified, and I told him that he dispelled the myth about men being unable to multitask, because he's not only the superintendent, he's principal of, I think, three schools and does all these other things, which all of you in the small rural schools do, and I applaud that. And it's unfortunate we're not able to give you the kind of money that we are. And hopefully we can change that. But you're right, it needs a long-term solution. Thank you for coming.
Yes, Senator Nelson and Senator Whitsett.
You're number eight when you're talking about the Rogue River School District declining. Do you have any opinion why that's happening?
I believe that the real estate values in Rogue River are beyond early startup families. We're a rural bedroom community to Grants Pass and Medford. And a young family, I think, simply cannot afford the properties at the current rate.
So they go to, they go to Grants Pass then, or you're losing your students to Grants Pass?
I believe so. We live in a beautiful little icon of a valley, and prices are expensive for young family members.
Senator, just to follow up, I mean, you're number 10, you're taking a long-term solution to adequate funding. The taxpayers have basically told us they're not going to pay more taxes. Tax reform, it's being talked about in the building, but you know that's going to have to go to the vote of the people. May or may not be of any significance. I've had our legislative revenue fellow say, I've asked him how many states in the United States have surpluses, and there's 12. 8 of those 12 are west of the Mississippi. Hawaii obviously has a tourist niche. Nevada has a gambling niche. And the other states basically have natural resource niches, Alaska being the biggest one. They have a $600 million surplus without an income tax or sales tax. So I'm advocating through this committee and basically in the Senate and in the legislature, you know, we have to go back to some sort of broad-based, huge industry in order to answer these questions, because I just feel like we're going to end up in some mediocrity situation unless we get back to that. And my appeal is also to the folks in this area is that the decline in our ability to fund public services pretty much parallels the decline in our timber industry. And until the people in the city get that message, we're going to be in serious trouble. So that's my soapbox for today.
Senator Winsett, did you have a question? Thank you very much for your presentation, and it was quite an excellent presentation.
Thank you.
I would like to add our schools are all strong. They are satisfactory to strong, and that Evans Valley Elementary has had a distinct honor for the last for 4 of the last 5 years or 5 of the last 6 years, nearly 100% of our third graders have met or conditionally met the benchmark in reading. I think that that is just a testament to the dedication of our employees. And unfortunately, because you're so high, you have nowhere to go, that school cannot get an exceptional rating anymore in the way those report cards are figured.
I'll take about 30 seconds more, just because we've asked everyone this and we haven't asked you. How did you do in terms of the state report card, and how are you doing in terms of annual yearly progress?
Well, 3 of our 4 schools were satisfactory, and Evans Valley was exceptional. Strong, I'm sorry. In terms of AYP, our high school did not meet AYP standards because of the special education population. Our middle school was a few tenths of a percentage point away from meeting the benchmark on attendance. But in all other regards, our state scores have gone up continue to make show improvement.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will go on to our final presenter today, who will be the Springfield School District. I'll remind Senate members that they are excused from the session until 10:30, and the House members, your session doesn't start until 10:30, I believe. Please proceed. And if you will identify yourself for
sure.
The record.
I'm Lori Adams. I'm on the Springfield School Board, this year's chair. This is Dr. Nancy Golden, our superintendent. And I'd like to introduce just 2 other people that are here with us as support in case the girls don't get it right today. Brett Yancey is our budget and finance director, and Jeff DeFranco is our community relations coordinator. And they're both here with us today. So I want to tell you about last week in Springfield School District. We had a pretty cool week. We have a middle school that just this year went Title I. Their scores have been low, and we rolled out a program that provides a laptop computer to every one of those kids in that school. They get to keep them 24/7. In a school where we don't have a lot of parent participation and involvement, every parent was in that building twice to get the update on how to work that computer and how to help their kids maintain it. And then they came in to sign them out, and they got more instruction, and it was pretty darn cool. And what we're seeing is kids who are coming to the school on the weekend, hiding in the bushes so that they can attach themselves to the wireless network and keep those computers running. And we're seeing kids that we can't send home from school. They don't want to leave. They're just so excited about what they're doing. The problem is, none of that money came from our general fund. We don't have it to do that kind of innovative programming. It came from the promise of QSAB funds, some Title I money, and some E-rate money. And we were able to provide that with also the assistance of Apple. That's the kind of option that we as a school district would like to have. When we've got a school that needs help, when we've got a school that's got problems going on, we'd like to be able to help them solve those problems. And we went out and found money to do it, but it didn't come from our general fund. We've been very aggressive in seeking funds through outside sources. Unfortunately, for many districts, this isn't a possibility, but we're lucky enough to be able to do that. The goal is to increase student success at Springfield Middle School. In addition, we hope to increase engagement at school, increase attendance, decrease behavior incidents, and increase parent involvement along with student participation. Now, that's something we'd like to have for every one of our schools, and we'd like to achieve that. I'm going to just talk to you as a school board member. And that is, as a school board member, what kind of decisions do I have to face? When we're looking at our budget, what are the decisions that we have to make? And for me, it's a little bit like deciding whether or not I can afford to buy my blood pressure medicine or my diabetes medicine. Which one am I going to buy? I may only have money for one or the other. So what's my choice going to be? That's about how hard these decisions are. We're focusing on literacy in our high schools, but Springfield High School needs a new boiler. And so do we let that boiler continue to run until it implodes? Or do we lay off a language arts teacher who will help us achieve our goal regarding literacy in order that we can replace that aging boiler? We don't even do preventative maintenance in our schools anymore. We do old building crisis management. We just don't have the money to do maintenance. In an attempt to address our early leavers, which when I was in school we called us dropouts, we are anticipating the start of an arts academy, an alternative school for those kids we can't keep hooked to school. The money is coming from a Gates Small Schools grant and from community partnerships. It's an attempt to reduce our dropout rate, to keep kids engaged in school, and the money's got to come from outside sources because we don't have it in our building, in our school district. Our options are so limited to help kids achieve. Dr. Golden's going to talk to you a little more about the numbers and what those look like. So.
Thank you. You should have in front of you a sheet that looks like this. It's a folded 11 by 17, and I'm going to just highlight some things there. First, I'd like to tell you that we have 11,138 students in Springfield Public Schools. And this is my second year as superintendent, and when I went, I asked the community in a community forum what they most wanted from me and the school district, and they wanted a vision. They wanted something that we could all go together to do the best we could on behalf of our students. So we've included that, too. It's called the Springfield Quality Ed Model. I personally talked to 1,000 people who represent 17,000 people out of the 55,000 people. We had community forums, and they were electric. And the community was so excited about the possibility for children in Springfield Public Schools. So we've got a collective sense of where we want to go. The thing we're missing is the adequate school funding to get us there. So I'm on the third thing down that says adequate school funding. Our expenses are far exceeding our ability to our revenue stream. Just to give you a sense, at the end of the 05-07 biennium, we would have less than a $10 million deficit, and when we get inside, I'll let you know how much that is relative to our whole budget. If you look at the chart on the next page, what I want to talk to you about is just give you a glimpse of the increases in expenses that we and all school districts are facing. If you look at our PERS, you'll see in the first column with the increase, it's going to cost us an extra $2.7 million starting next year. Settlements are probably going to cost $1.49 million. Other things like health costs, $640,000, and operating utilities, cost of electricity and stuff like that, up $80,000. So these are increased costs, far exceeding our revenue stream. I just want you to know for Springfield, for every $100 million allocated from the school fund, that means $1 million for Springfield Public Schools. When you look at that, what you can see is $1 million can support 3 days of operation. It equals 15 certified staff. It would lower the class size by one. It would provide after-school programs for all of our students so they could meet AYP and get recreational activities, maybe reduce some of the issues related to health that we're facing with our children. We want you to know, like a lot of school districts, we have extreme maintenance needs. That's because we have had to trade off maintenance or staff or class size. We have high priority of about $24 million in maintenance, medium priority of over $18 million, and on and on. And this is taken as a result of a district facility assessment done with community members. If you look inside and just take the middle piece out, I want to talk a little bit about our students, and you'll see some things similar to what I've heard from the other districts. our enrollment is basically flat, but what you will see is that our children in poverty have raised from about 41% to 55%. At the same time, if you look at our English language learners, since 01, we've gone from 245 to 672 language learners. Last week, we got two children in mid-school. They haven't been in school since second grade, and they don't speak any English. And that's not unusual for what we're beginning to see of kids entering our school system. Our enrollment is flat, but one thing you'll see is that our special education population has increased dramatically. We're very close to University of Oregon, who's known for their special ed services, and people move to our community because of the special ed services. These are very high-cost kids, autistic kids, so we certainly, it includes an increased cost. And then let's take a look at our staffing. What you will see is that we've had a 3.8 decrease. That's 21.4 FTE in certified staff, 15% decrease, 9.8 FTE in administrative staff, and an increase of 5.5 in classified. And again, that's due to our high special ed population and also the choices people are making between How do you really staff a school? And sometimes you choose to have more classified people than certified just because the classified cost is less. So we've done some classified staff helping with our large class sizes. If you just look at the back page, and then I'll get to the money in a minute. We have diminishing resources, and we have increased needs. And I wanted to just highlight what these increased demands are. We all have No Child Left Behind. We have the Oregon Educational Act for the 21st century. We have an achievement gap, and we just gave you one chart that highlights our eighth grade scores in reading and math, comparing our white students to our Hispanic students, and it becomes very clear there's an achievement gap. This is very similar that you see across the state. In addition to that, we do have increases in our minority students. And I want you to know with that comes all sorts of opportunities and challenges. There's opportunities for us to learn to be culturally competent, to understand and honor these different nationalities that are becoming part of our schools. There's also challenge because, like any other school district, we have racism. We have some hate mail going around in our schools that is absolutely frightening. We have to reduce the achievement gap. We have to become culturally competent. We have to assure a safe and secure environment. And I have to say, nobody in the state probably knows that better than Springfield School District after the Thurston shooting that occurred 6 years ago in our community. We have to address the literacy challenge. Our data looks like a lot of school district data. Our mid and high school literacy rates will not graduate the kind of students who can work in our communities and in our state, and we need to work on that. So many of our students in the Springfield Quality Ed model and families talk about the need for professional technical programs. These are kids who really can excel with hands-on opportunities, but in straight academic courses don't seem to be able to engage. We need resources to provide new delivery models so we keep all of our kids in school. Like most school districts, we face a dropout problem. Our dropout rate is better than the average in the state, and we lose 250 kids out of our high school senior class every year, and that's out of high schools that have about, collectively our two high schools have 3,000 students. We really can't afford to lose these kids. So that's just a little bit about Springfield School Districts, our hopes, our dreams, our children, our realities, our concerns, and our opportunities. The middle page talks about what's happened to us since the 01 biennium, and we've actually shown you a percentage of change. So if you look at student-teacher ratio, you'll see the percentage of change in the red. You see that that has decreased since the 01, 02 biennium. I know you were asking questions earlier about are our specialists in there, our counselors and specialists, and they are. So if you look at the average class size, what you're going to see is we've got 27 K-5, 27, 6-8, and 29, and 9-12. And remember the increase in the needs of our children when you look at those figures. Our co-curricular, which is an absolute hook for so many of our kids and keeps them busy after school as opposed to involved in some of the other things that can happen when you're unsupervised after school, is decreasing. You'll see that on the chart. And you'll also see that our staffing levels have decreased significantly, except for our classified staff due to the increase in our special ed population and the way we've tried to solve our staffing problem. On the bottom, you'll get a look at our state school funds from the 201-202 into the governor's proposed budget. You'll also get a look at the general fund and our actual federal and state dollars. Like so many have said, we desperately need a 5.3 budget, state budget to support our kids. In addition, we really do need stable funding that would allow us to be the smartest people we could be in terms of doing the best we could by our kids. It was interesting because yesterday on my way up to Salem, I stopped to get a cup of coffee, and I started my career as a teacher in Springfield School District, so it's just amazing that I get to return as the superintendent. I mean, it's really a dream come true for me. When I got a cup of coffee, a student, probably because she's seen me in the media, said, "Are you Miss Golden?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "You were my second grade teacher." And she said, "I will be graduating from the U of O, and I want to become a French teacher." And she said, "It is because of you and all the other teachers." So that's the dream for every single child. Public education is the great equalizer. I know you have a tremendous job to do to help all of our children, and I appreciate your leadership and the leadership of our board and our colleagues. Thank you very much.
Questions? We
have asked actually each presenter to talk to about the school report card and No Child Left Behind in regards to annual yearly progress. Can you give us kind of an overview of the district?
Sure. First of all, if you were to get a chance to read the Springfield Quality Ed model, you'll see one of our goals is a continuous improvement model. So when we look at data, we look very closely at where are we and where's the next level we're going. We think that's important because with AYP and the demands of AYP, we can only get as far as you can get at any given time. To us, the growth curve is critically important. So I can tell you in all of our schools, we are experiencing a growth curve. In terms of No Child Left Behind, all of our elementary schools met AYP. Of course, it's increasing next year. You all know that. Two of our five middle schools met AYP, and those are our middle schools that have, when you look at the SES, the higher SES students, that's leaving three of our schools that did not meet. One was only missed on attendance, and none of our high schools, like most of the high schools across the state, met AYP. In terms of our state report card, we didn't bring that data, but all of our elementary schools are a few satisfactory. Most of them are in the good category and the exceptional category. At our mid schools, we have, I think, two exceptional mid schools and I think two in need of improvement. And at our high school, I think both of our high schools are satisfactory. I apologize for not bringing the state data. I can get that to you if you want it.
And just out of curiosity, how many of your children are reduced lunch in the school district?
55%.
55, so very high percentage.
Yeah.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real fast, I asked two of the other three presenters, what's your contract for teachers? How many days and how many days are they are not in non-instructional days? And I think it's important. This has been very valuable to me to hear from all the schools and how dedicated. I know my school board members and my school district are very dedicated. But it was interesting, the Rogue Valley presentation talked about the students saying they'd rather have more school days then if anything. But actually, when we're looking at the whole Oregon K-12 system, for every day that we reduce instruction, it saves $30 million. $30 million. So in actuality, if we could save a few days, we could actually reduce class sizes, because just the teachers would not be getting as much money. But every day of reduce the school year is $30 million.
Would you like to come and handle our negotiations, please?
So Brett's going to answer that question.
Representative Wisnett, we have 192 days in our teacher contract. We have approximately 7 staff development days. That is, as you can imagine, that is a huge negotiation issue when you start negotiating professional development. This past year, I think it's important to point out that we have focused more of our attention on staff development, professional development. I think as you see the programs that we are engaging in Springfield with the one-to-one laptop initiative, the upcoming Arts Academy, those types of opportunities are just crucial when we're trying to engage the students that tend to be leaving our education facilities. So that staff development is important in our district. I know it's important in the state, and we have we do address that during collective bargaining.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry, Brett Yancey, Director of Budget and Finance.
Could you put it in another term? How about student contact days? It's not just 7.
Correct. Student contact days are 176.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It's very much appreciated. We apologize for having to close so quickly. The Senate has been on the floor for about 20 minutes, and all of my House members to my left have to be on the floor by 10:30. I want to thank you all for coming this morning. We will have 4 more school districts tomorrow morning. With that, the committee is adjourned.
Thank you.
Good job, Chair.